Hi, everyone. Welcome back. Pleasure to see you this week. I was sad to not learn with everyone last week, but I hope everyone had a nice little break, and I hope everyone is staying warm and safe in the very inclement weather for anyone who's joining us from outside of Chicago. Even in Chicago, I think we consider this to be a lot of snow. I might be wrong, but this looks like a lot of snow. Kind of. I'm getting some kind of. If it's enough that, like, it was snowing last night and it's still snowing this morning, I think that's a lot of snow. Okay.
It was steady snow. It wasn't a storm. So we're doing okay.
Right. Okay, fine.
And it's just starting here.
Okay, good luck. Okay. I want everyone to think for a minute of that song that stands out in your head as iconic. It can either be something that brings back a specific time in your life, a specific time in history, a memory for you, just that song that really stands out in your mind as iconic. And I'm sure if we went around, every person would have a different song that stands out to them. However, I also believe that there are certain songs that if I said, think about, I don't know, the Six-Day War. Is there a song that stands out to you that we would think of Yerushalayim Shel Zahav if we were going to think about Yerushalayim? If I would say to you to think of something that represents, I don't know, another specific time in history, there would be certain songs that would stand out to people as iconic. However, I would like to say that one of the most iconic songs in all of history is Shirat Hayam, is the song of the sea that was Az Yashir, that was sung by Moshe and the men and Miriam and the women in this week's Parsha, Parsha Peshalach. This is the song of gratitude that they burst into as soon as they had crossed the Sea of Reeds. And this song is a song that many people don't sing. It's beautiful if you do, but we at least say every day in our morning tefillah. If we are going to think of a song that represents a time in history, that would definitely be a song that stands out. So if we look in Shemot, in Perek Tet Vav, Pasuk Chaf, it says, Vatikach Miriam Hanevia, Achot Aaron, et Hatof Biada, One of the most famous psukim about women in all of the Torah, that as soon as they crossed the Yamsuf, the women led by Miriam took their tambourines and they took their drums and they burst into song and they sing out to HaKadosh Baruch Hu to thank Hashem for crossing them across the sea. And we can ask many questions based on this pasuk. We could ask the question of why is Miriam called Miriam HaNeviah, Miriam the prophetess? Sarah, who we definitely know was a prophetess of great stature, was never once in all of Torah referred to as HaNeviah. Why should Miriam be referred to as HaNeviah? Or we could ask the question of why was Miriam referred to as Achot Aharon, the sister of Aaron? If we're going to identify her by one of her siblings, we know Aaron's great, but we would probably choose Moshe. So why is Miriam specifically identified as Achot Aharon? And we could also ask the question of where did they get these instruments from? Why all of a sudden, of all the things they packed to leave Egypt, why did they bring their musical instruments? I am sorry, I know I'm not very musically inclined, but the first thing that I would think to pack would most definitely not be tambourines and drums. So there are a number of questions we could ask. But the question that I want to focus on in the context of our shiur today is, what was Miriam's relationship with the Jewish nation? Was this typical of Miriam? That it seems to naturally arise in the pasuk that Miriam led the women in song. Was this usual? Was Miriam in a position of leadership? Did she regularly lead the women? Were they used to looking to her as someone who would direct them as to what to do? Or was Miriam just really one of the women? And this was her moment to shine. This was the moment that she emerged as a leader. And did that continue at all? So while we may touch on some of these other questions today, what we are going to focus on is what was Miriam's relationship to the Jewish nation as a whole, and specifically to the women. And I want to go through three approaches. The first approach is that of Rav Shimshon Raphael Hirsch. For anyone who is looking at the source sheet, I apologize that it is not the most clear picture. And one might notice that it is brought down in English, while most of my sources are usually brought in Hebrew. Rav Hirsch was originally written in German, therefore the Hebrew that we have and the English that we have is all a translation, and therefore I found the English, so I brought the English. And Rav Hirsch brings the first approach. He says, why was Miriam referred to as Achot Aharon, the sister of Aharon, and not the sister of Moshe? And he answers, amongst the women, she occupied the position that Aaron held amongst the men. As Aaron spread amongst the men the word that was revealed to Moshe, so did Miriam amongst the women. This is the approach of Rav Hirsch. That why is she referred to as Achot Aharon? Because there was not only one leader of the Jewish nation at that time, it was not just Moshe alone. Rather, there was a leadership team. Rav Hirsch says that Moshe was the one who received communication directly from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and therefore he was the main leader. However, we know that Moshe was Kaved Pau Kaved Lashon. Moshe had trouble speaking, and therefore he had Aaron as his right-hand man. Aaron was always there as his interpreter, his one who was able to convey what he had received from HaKadosh Baruch Hu down to the Jewish people. And Rav Hirsch says that Miriam was also part of this leadership team, and the role that Aaron played for the men, Miriam played for the women. That this team was comprised of the three siblings. Moshe would receive word from Hashem. He would convey it to Moshe and Aaron, and they in turn would relay it to the Jewish people, Aaron to the men and Miriam to the women. Therefore, Rav Hirsch says it was appropriate to refer to Miriam as Achot Aharon because the Jewish people saw Aaron as their communicator from Moshe, and so too they would look at Miriam as connected to Aaron, that they played the same role, and that is why Miriam was referred to as that. So if we are going according to Rav Hirsch, then what was the role of Miriam? She was part of the leadership team. This was a natural role for her to play, that when she led the women in song, this was not something unusual. They were used to Miriam being their leader. That is our first approach. The second, and this idea is corroborated by a number of statements made later on. One of them is in Sefer Bamidbar. This is the story in which Miriam and Aaron get into a little bit of trouble when they are standing around one day and they are discussing Moshe and his wife. And Miriam ends up speaking Lashon Hara. We know that Miriam is struck with Sara'at. And one of the statements that Miriam makes at that time is, Vayomru, harak ach b'moshe diber Hashem, halo gam banu diber v'yishma Hashem. Miriam makes a statement and says, has Hashem only spoken to Moshe? Halo gam banu diber. Does he not also speak through us? At this point, we will discuss this whole story more in depth at a later point in the shiur. However, the statement that I want to zoom in on is Gam Banu Diber, that Miriam says, Hashem also speaks through us. She is putting herself at equal level with Aaron. This would support the idea that they played similar roles, that she did not separate them in saying that doesn't Hashem speak to you? Doesn't Hashem speak to me? Rather, she groups them together and says, Gam Banu Diber, that Hashem speaks to both of us in the same way. And secondly, this idea is supported by a pasuk in Micha, that in Micha it says, that Hashem says, Ki ha'alticha me'eretz Mitzrayim, that I took you up from Eretz Mitzrayim, umibit avadim pediticha, and I redeemed you from the house of slaves, ve'eshlach lefanecha, and I sent before you, et Moshe Aaron v'Miriam. I sent before you this great leadership team of Moshe, Aaron, and Miriam. That he doesn't just say, I sent before you Moshe and Aaron. He equates Miriam with the other two, and therefore we can see that Miriam was a very active participant in the leadership of the nation. So that is our first approach. Miriam is just one of the leaders. This is typical of her. She is in some ways a political leader. it totally makes sense that she would lead the people in song. The second approach, however, is slightly different, and this is the approach of the Chasam Sofer. One of the most often quoted explanations of the pasuk that we began with is Rashi. That Rashi asks the question that we asked, which is, why did the women have their instruments? I can tell you, not anymore, now I don't really go anywhere. But when we used to leave the house, there would be so many things to remember. There's food, and there's changes of clothes, and there's drinks, and there's, I don't know, anything you could possibly need. And probably the very last thing I would think to include on my list is musical instruments. Why specifically does it say that the women burst into song, not only with their voices, but also with tupim umecholot, with tambourines and with drums? And Rashi comments here and says, Muftachot hayu tzidkaniyot shabador, shehakadosh baruch hu oseh lahem nisim, vehutziu tupim mimitzrayim. Rashi is quoting the Mechilta, one of the Midrashim, and he says, the women of this generation were muftachot that Hashem would make a miracle for them. They had such strong emunah and bitachon in HaKadosh Baruch Hu that they had no doubt that Hashem would do a miracle for them. And therefore, before they even left Egypt, when they were still in their place of bondage, they were able to have the foresight to say that Hashem is going to redeem us with great miracles, and therefore we must bring with us a mechanism through which to praise Hashem. And they said, we must remember to pack our musical instruments, because we know we are going to have to celebrate the miracle that Hashem is going to do for us. Therefore, the women made sure to pack their musical instruments. This commentary makes sense based on the idea that we have brought down in other midrashim of the Nashim Tzidkaniot, that the women of that generation were extremely righteous, and that it was Bishut Nashim Tzidkaniot Nigalu Mimitzrayim, that it was in the merit of the righteous women of that generation that we were redeemed from Egypt. And this idea supports that we know that the women worked as hard as they could while they were in Egypt to continue the Jewish nation. And they were seen as righteous. They remained focused on their goal of continuing the Jewish people and of eventually being prepared to leave Egypt, that it makes total sense that they would also have had such strong emunah and bitachon that they would prepare in advance for the miracle that they knew Hashem was going to make for them. And we know this idea of Nashim Tzidkaniot has practical ramifications until today, that women are fully obligated in all of the mitzvot at Leil HaSeder, because we believe not only were women included in the miracle, rather it was because of the women that the miracle happened. Therefore, we say not only afhin hayu be'otu hanis, that they were included in the miracle, rather it was bischot nashim tzidkaniot nigalu, because of the righteous women we were redeemed. And the Midrash brings down that in the future, so too will we be redeemed because of the righteous women. So that is the approach of Rashi. And the Chasam Sofer comments here as well. And he brings down our next approach to what Miriam's interaction with the Jewish nation was. The Chasam Sofer says, Hinei b'ha'anashim kitiv, with the men it says, V'yaminu b'Hashem u'b'moshe avdo, that at the sea, the men believed in Hashem and they believed in Moshe, his servant, as well. Ha'aminu, the men believed, based on what happened at the Yam Suf, that they believed in Hashem, but they also believed that Hashem would only make miracles through Moshe. That they believed that if Moshe had not been present, Hashem would not have made miracles through somebody else. Al kein amru, ki ze Moshe ha'ish lo yadanu ma hayalo, Alkin bekshu tzurah shetishkon alav kvod Hashem. When it comes to Chet HaEgel, the men defend what they did by saying that we no longer knew what had happened to Moshe, and therefore we needed another figure on which Kavod Hashem could rest. Therefore, because they believed that it was only through Moshe that Hashem could do miracles, once Moshe was gone, the men of the nation panicked, and they said, we need another symbol, another tangible whether it would be a person or an object, through which Hashem can present himself to us. That the Ramban says this was the reason that they did Chet HaEgel, that it wasn't that they meant to serve Avodah Zarah, rather they wanted to continue to serve Hashem, but they needed another second party, that Moshe had always been this conduit between them and HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and through building the Egel, they meant to replace Moshe as that conduit. Ach, Hanashim ha'aminu gam b'Miriam ha'neviyah. But for the women, even at the Yam Suf, there was another person in the equation, and that was Miriam ha'neviyah. Afal pi shelo astaniflau v'lo shum davar. But the women recognized that they believed in Miriam, even though she had not played an active role in doing any of the miracle. They rather saw Miriam as a symbol in this situation that directed them to the true cause of the miracle. They did not see Moshe only as the one involved, rather they saw Miriam as well. How was Miriam involved? Not by producing the miracle, not by bringing about the miracle in any way, rather, in immediately upon the occurrence of the miracle, showing them what it meant to turn to the one who had created the miracle and praise Hashem. Al kein be'egel lo nitratzu hanashim. Therefore, at the Chet HaEgel, the women did not want to be involved. Ki amru, because they said, im ein Moshe, yesh neviim achirim. The women had the true perspective, and they said, if it's not Moshe, it will be somebody else. If Moshe wasn't going to be the Navi of choice, there could have always been Miriam. There could have been any other Navi. The Alkin hitasvu al chor b'nashal Miriam, ki chashvu im chor yaseh lahem elokim, shehu b'nashal Miriam, al yedezeh yitratzu gam hanashim. That is why the men then approached Chor, the son of Miriam, to build the Egel, because the men still did not have an understanding of the approach that the women were taking. The men said, okay, it must be that in the same way that we believe that Moshe is the conduit from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the women must believe the same of Miriam, that they must believe that she is the true connection to Hashem. Therefore, they approached Chor, her son, to build the Egel, thinking that if Chor was the one who built the Egel, the women would want to participate. Sorry, I lost my place. Aval Chor masar nafsho, but Chor did not agree to build the Egel. V'zachah lebitzalel ben bino sheyaseh hamishkan. And Chor merited that his son, Bitzalel, should be the one to build the Mishkan, which eventually was the kapara for Chet HaEgel. So what is the Chasam Sofer teaching us? He as well is saying that Miriam was a leadership figure for the nation. But he takes it one step further than Rav Hirsch did. Rav Hirsch said that Miriam was just one of the leaders, that Moshe practically needed a translator or someone who could act as a mechanism through which he can convey the word of Hashem down to the people. And Aaron was that conduit for the men, and Miriam was the conduit for the women. However, the Chasam Sofer is presenting us with a much more complex idea. The Chasam Sofer was saying that Miriam was a leader in the most effective model of leadership. What is this model? That when someone is an effective leader, and specifically a religious leader, they recognize that they are not the important part in the equation. That if everyone were to think about a leader that was dedicated to a cause, the symbol that they were effective would be if the nation, even when they are no longer around, believes in that ultimate cause. That whatever the cause is, if the cause outlives the leader, this leader has been successful. And that was what Miriam did. Miriam did not build herself up as this grand leader over the nation. Not to say, chas v'shalom, that was what Moshe tried to do in any sort of way. I think that Moshe's position as directly being the one who carried out the miracles put him in this sort of higher position in the eyes of the nation, that they did see him as completely connected to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. But Miriam, I think, was on just the lower level. That Miriam was really just a leader, one who was meant to gather, one who was meant to direct the nation. And she did this in an effective manner, in that the people were able to see that who was truly in charge? Not Miriam, but HaKadosh Baruch Hu. They saw everything that came through Miriam as directly from Hashem. Another leader that automatically came to mind when I was reading this leadership model that we learned from Miriam, this one of being completely focused on the cause and not the individual themselves, is the Lubavitcher Rebbe. I was recently listening to an interview with Rav Moshe Kotlarsky of Chabad. He is currently in charge of many of the different branches of Chabad education and Chabad Shlichus. And he was asked, how is it that so many years after the Rebbe's death, people are still heading off to the far-flung places of the earth with the motivation that the Rebbe has sent them there? And he said, because the Rebbe was never focused on himself. It was not about what he wanted or what he believed that they should do. He taught his followers to be completely focused on what he believed Hashem's mission for them in this world was. That if they can ignite the spark in the heart of even one Jew, then they have been successful in serving in Sivos Hashem, in the army of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that the job of all of us as soldiers of Hashem is to go out into the world and to bring back every Jew. And therefore, yes, although it is controversial and many will say that it is so focused on the Rebbe, but I think if we boil it down to what it is at its core, that Miriam very much led in this way of the Lubavitcher Rebbe, that it was totally about the mission and not about the individual. And when one leads effectively in this manner, the mission lives on long after the leader is gone. So too with Miriam, even once they were at Chit HaEgel, Miriam was still alive, but this message held true for the women, that it was not about Miriam, it was not about any one individual, it is truly only about HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and if Hashem does not want them to serve him through an intermediary, then it doesn't matter if that intermediary has disappeared. Hashem wants us to serve him directly, and that is what's important. And this connects to the idea that the women brought their instruments, because I would like to say that Miriam was not only their physical leader, their political leader, rather Miriam was their spiritual leader. She not only provided guidance as to where to go and how to travel and what to do, she represented to them what it meant to be a true Eved Hashem. She was the inspiration to the women of the nation, and therefore it also makes complete sense that Miriam would have been the one to lead them in song, in praise of Hashem. That they always look to Miriam as this example of how to serve Hashem, and therefore at the pinnacle of our relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu when he has just done this tremendous miracle for us, obviously they would look to Miriam HaNeviyah. They would look to her as to the proper way to thank Hashem in that moment. So that is the second approach, that Miriam was not only this physical leader, rather she was also this spiritual role model. She directed them in their Avodas Hashem. However, there is a third approach, and this approach is based on a close reading of the Psukim that I saw developed by Rav Shmuel Golden. In this third approach, we are going to look at the two songs. There is the song of Moshe, and there is the song of Miriam. And whenever there seems to be almost identical Psukim brought down, we always have to ask the question of what is the benefit of bringing down both? We know there is not even one extra letter in the Torah. And therefore, why would the song of Miriam that seems so similar to the song of Moshe be brought down as well? If we look in Shmos Tetvav Pasuk Aleph, this is the song of Moshe. Az yashir Moshe uvenei Yisrael et hashira hazot lahashem vayamru lemor. Ashira lahashem ki ga'oga sus v'rachvo rama bayam. Moshe says, ashira lahashem, we will praise Hashem, written in future tense. Kiga oga, for he has triumphed. Horse and driver has been hurled into the sea. That all of the horsemen of Egypt have drowned into the Yamsuf. But Moshe says, Ashira la Hashem. We will sing to Hashem. Whereas in Shmos Tetvav Pasuk Chaf Aleph, which is the song of Miriam, it says, Vata'am lahem Miriam. Shiru Lashem ki ga'oga'a sus v'rach v'rama bayam. This pasuk is identical except in the tense in which they are speaking. As opposed to Moshe, who spoke in future tense, Miriam says, Shiru la Hashem, sing to God. Not we will sing to God, rather sing right now. And Rabbi Golden brings out a very interesting distinction between these psukim. He says, what is Miriam's message? Miriam is saying to Moshe, she's saying, Moshe, yes, what has happened here is incredible. The fact that Sus v'Rochvo Rama Bayam, that all the chariots of Paro have drowned into the sea, that is incredible. But what have we done? That's it. All that has happened until this point is that we have been saved from Egypt. But now what, Moshe? We cannot stay here and sing forever. We have so much more to accomplish. Miriam says, Shiru la Hashem. Yes, we must stop and praise Hashem right now. But we can't continue to stay here and praise forever, because then we will not accomplish anything. Moshe, we still have to head on to Har Sinai. We have to receive the Torah. We have to fulfill our destiny as a Jewish people. Our destiny was not just to be saved from Egypt, to stay here on the banks of the river. Rather, we must continue on. We must go on to Har Sinai. We must continue to grow and develop as a nation and to work towards our ultimate destiny of being an Am Hashem, receiving the Torah, and continuing on from there. So as opposed to Moshe, who is saying, let's sing, let's praise for a while. Ashir la Hashem, we will continue to sing and praise. Miriam says, no, Shiru la Hashem, let us sing now, and then let us move on. This message is internalized by Moshe in the next pasuk when it says, Vayisa Moshe et Yisrael. Moshe caused the nation to travel. It doesn't simply say Vayisu Ha'am, as it says in all the other places that the nation traveled. Rather, Moshe caused the nation to travel. That Moshe internalized this message from Miriam, and therefore he said to the people, you know what? We're done here. We have praised God. We have thanked Hashem for what he did for us. Now let us continue. Let us move on to our ultimate mission. We can't be stagnant here. We must continue to grow. And I would like to say that this was the true role of Miriam for the Jewish people. She was not only their leader that organized them. She was not only the leader that was a spiritual symbol for them, one who directed them in their Avodas Hashem. Rather, I would like to say that Miriam was the motivator of the nation. That whenever Miriam is involved, she is the one who pushes the nation ahead, who forces them not to stay stagnant where they are, but to continue to grow, to continue to move on. And I would like to say that this can be proved from each and every one of the other examples in which we see Miriam. Now, interesting to note, this pasuk of Miriam at the Yamsuf is the first one in which we actually see Miriam's name. However, there are a number of stories before then that we know that Miriam was involved. The first of which is the story of the Mi'al Dot, that it says, Shmos Parak Aleph, Vayomer Melch Mitzrayim LeMi'al Dot HaEvriot Asher Shem HaEchad Shifra V'Shem HaSheni Pua, that we know the story that Paro calls in the two Jewish midwives, Shifra and Pua. And Rashi quotes from the Midrash there and says, who are these women, Shifra and Pua? Pua zo Miriam. Shepua umidaberet v'huga lavlad. That who was this Miriam? Miriam was this woman. Who was Pua? She was Miriam, who would coo and try to comfort the baby. Kidarach hanashim u'mifaisot hatinok habocha po'el lashon tza'aka kimo kioda apa'a. So he brings two explanations why was she named Pua, and the first of which is the more famous, that she was the one who pu'a u'midaberet lavlad, that she would comfort the baby, she would coo to the baby. Her mother was the one who was Shifra Misha Peret et Havlad. She would physically clean up the baby, and Miriam would be the one to comfort it. So how do we see this midah of being the motivator, the one to push them ahead from the story of the Mi'al Dot? This is the most basic way of continuity, that she was told, put an end to this Jewish nation. She was commanded by the king of Egypt to literally squelch any opportunity that the Jewish nation had to grow. They had to kill out all of the male babies. And her mother together said, we are not going to stand for this. We know that the mission of the Jewish nation is to continue to grow and to prosper and to continue on. And therefore, we will not kill out these Jewish baby boys. We will do whatever we can. We will even go against the direct decree from the king of Egypt in order to make sure that the Jewish nation has continuity. So on a broad scale within the Jewish people, she continued on the Jewish nation, that she refused to kill out those Jewish baby boys. The next story in which we see Miriam, again, not by name, but brought down in the Midrash, is in the story in Shmuel Perek Bet, of Vayelach Ish mi Beit Levi, Vayikach et Bat Levi. This is understood to be the story of Amram and Yocheved. That it says, Vayelach Ish mi Beit Levi, that a man went from the house of Levi and married Bat Levi. Vatahar ha'isha vatila ben, vatirao tokito, vatispineu shalshay rachem. We have read these tukim many, many times. That this is the story of the birth of Moshe. And the Gemara and Sota brings down a story here and says, who are these unidentified people? What is going on exactly here? Why is no one mentioned by name? Is this a first marriage? Is this a second marriage? And the Gemara and Sota explains it all. The Gemara and Sota says, Tana, Amram gadol hador haya. Amram was the gadol hador at the time. Paru Sharaasha Amar Paru Harasha Kol Ben Hayalod Hayorat Hashlichuhu Amar Lashav Anu Amilin Amad Vigirish Adishel. Amram, who was the gadol hador at this time, had heard the decree of Paro, who had said, Kol Ben Hayalod Hayorat Hashlichuhu. All sons who are born should be thrown into the Nile River. And he turned to his wife and he said, for what purpose should we continue to build our family? And upon hearing this decree, v'girish et ishto, he separated from his wife. Amdu kulan v'girshu et nishotehen. All of the men of the generation followed. They got up and they divorced their wives as well. Amra lo bito. But his daughter approached him and said, Abba, kashe gziratcha yoter mishal paro. Your gezerah is more harsh than that of Paro. She Paro lo gazar al hazacharim. That Paro only decreed on the males. Ve'atem gazart al hazacharim ve'al hanekivot. You commanded on the men and the women that by not being married to my mother any longer, you will not have any more children, not men and not women. Paro lo gazar ela bo'olam hazeh. And she continued with her arguments against her father. And we understand this is Miriam. Miriam was the daughter of Amram. And she says, you Abba, you commanded not only on continuation in this world, Paro commanded only that we kill out the Jewish babies who are born into this world, but rather, by not even giving birth to these Jewish babies, you are commanding that they will not have life both in this world and in the next world. Paro harasha safik mitkayem et gezirato. Paro is a rasha. He is an evil person, and therefore it is a safik. It is always unsure whether the words of a rasha will come true. Safik ino mitkayem et ata tzadik, but you are a righteous person. Bivadai shegeziratcha mitkayemet. You are a tzaddik, of course your gezerah will come true. That even though Paro commanded that all the Jewish baby boys should be killed, who knows if that will actually come true, but you are a tzaddik. Definitely, if you decree that no baby boys will be born, they will definitely not be born. Shnei amar v'tigzar v'omer v'yakam amad v'hachzir et ishto, amdu kulan v'hachziran et neshotehen. Miriam was this impetus. Her arguments were this driving force that brought Amram to remarry his wife Yocheved and eventually give birth to Moshe Rabbeinu. And all of the men of the generation followed and resumed life with their wives. So we see that Miriam, not only on the broad macro level, when it was decreed upon the entire nation and she took a stand and decided to not kill the baby boys, but she directly took on this fight. When she saw her father separate from her mother, she went to her father and says, Abba, we cannot continue this way. This is not what we do as Jewish people. Even in the face of adversity, we must continue on. We must continue to grow. We must keep moving forward. Even if it seems like the odds are against us, that Paro has decreed to completely squash any efforts we have to grow, we need to stand up against this. We need to continue to move forward. Just keep going, Abba. And if anyone saw the title of this year, it is titled Just Keep Swimming. We are this is, for anyone who recognizes, it is a quote from Finding Nemo, that one of the pieces of encouragement that anyone who is unfamiliar with the story of Finding Nemo, there is a little baby fish that gets lost, and it is the story of the father to discover his son. And one of the instructions that he receives from another fish in the movie is just keep swimming, just keep swimming. No matter what's happening to you, you just need to remember to just keep swimming. And this quote automatically jumped into my head when I thought of Miriam. That Miriam was saying to the Jewish people, it seems like everything is against us, but just keep going, Abba. Just keep going, everyone. We have to keep moving. And again, this continues and can be proven also from the story of Miriam speaking Lashon Hara. That it is brought down by the Mefarshim that when Miriam, in Bamidbar Yudbet, when Miriam says, "Vatidaber Miriam ve'Aaron b'Moshe, alodot ha'isha hu'kushit, asher lakach ki isha kushit lakach. Ve'amru harak ach b'Moshe diber Hashem, halo gam banu diber Hashem, diber ve'yishma Hashem." Rashi comments there, it says that Miriam and Aaron were discussing Moshe and his isha hakushit, his Cushi wife. It says they were discussing her and they said, doesn't Hashem also speak to us? And Rashi comments here, what were they speaking about? What was the problem that Miriam and Aaron had with Moshe? It says, he patcha b'dibor t'chila, l'fichach hektima hakatov, minayin hayta yuda'a Miriam, shepiresh Moshe min ha'isha. Rabbi Natan Omer, Miriam hayta b'tzad tzipora b'sha shena amar Moshe, eldad umidan mitnambim b'machaneh. Kivan sheshamat tzipora amrai oy l'nishotein shel ilu, imhim niskakim l'nivua. Rashi brings down an interesting story. She says that prior to this conversation between Miriam and Aaron, Miriam was standing with Tzipora, the wife of Moshe. When Moshe heard about Eldad Umidad, the two men who were receiving Nevua within the camp. And immediately upon hearing what had happened, that they had received Nevua, Tzipora let out an exclamation and said, Oy l'nishotehen, I feel so bad for their wives. Anyone who is the wife of someone who receives Nevua. And Miriam understood this to mean that Moshe had separated from his wife. That Moshe had believed he was on a extremely high level of Nevua, which he was. And therefore, in order to constantly be tahor, in order to receive Nevua from Hashem, in order to constantly be in a state of purity, he separated from his wife. So that he would not be put into any situation through relations with his wife in which he would become impure. Miriam heard this and immediately reported to Aaron and said, who does Moshe think he is? Why has he separated from his wife? Don't we also receive Nevuah from Hashem? And we have not separated from our spouses. And I would like to say that this as well fits into this framework and what we know about Miriam. That Miriam was so motivated by this midah of constantly being motivated to continue on, to keep going, to keep growing, that she could not fathom a situation in which Moshe, the leader who was meant to be the example for the entire Jewish people, would deem himself worthy of a position, that he would separate from his wife, that he would say, yes, everyone else should continue on growing, should continue the nation, but I am going to separate from my wife. I am too holy. And Miriam saw this as so problematic. She saw what happens when the Gadol Hador separates from their wife. When the Gadol Hador, who was her father, had set this example, everyone else had followed. The entire nation had separated because of what her father had done. And she saw this in Moshe, and she was not happy about it. And yes, she should not have spoken Lashon Hara about her brother. But the point that she was making goes right along with what we have seen about Miriam until this point. that she is that motivation. She thinks that everyone at all times must just continue on going. Keep on going, keep on growing. And then, very interestingly, we know that Miriam is struck with Sara'at, that she receives the punishment that one gets for speaking Lashon Hara, and she must camp outside of the camp for 7 days. And it says in the very last pasuk of this source, V'ha'am lo nasa ad ha'asaf Miriam, that the nation did not travel without Miriam. They stayed where they were. And I think that this is probably the strongest point that supports this claim that Miriam was this motivator. That it is not only that the nation had such respect for Miriam that they wanted to wait for her, rather, they could not move without her. They needed not only the Ananea Kavo that were directing them, or Moshe indicating that the nation should travel, but they always needed Miriam, who was their cheerleader. She was their motivator. She was saying, keep on going, everybody. I know it's been a long journey through the desert, but just keep on going. And I see we have a question in the chat. Do we know if Miriam ever married and had a family? Yes, Miriam was married to Kalev, who we hear about later on as one of these spies, and she had her son, Chor. Chor was the son that was asked to build the Egel. And he declined, and he was killed because of it. However, his descendant is Bezalel. Bezalel is the one who builds the Mishkan. So we definitely hear about the family of Miriam. But without Miriam, the nation could not continue to travel. So they waited for her. They waited those 7 days until they had their motivator right back with them. That they needed Miriam to continue to push them, to continue to grow, to keep on traveling. And lastly, to make this point and really bring it home, we know that in the schus of Aaron, Moshe, and Miriam, the nation receives 3 miracles from Hashem. The Gemara in Tani brings down this idea. Rabbi Yossi bar Yehuda Omer, Rabbi Yossi teaches us, Shlosha parnasim tovim amdu li Yisrael. B'nai Yisrael had 3 supports. Eluhin, Moshe, Aaron, Miriam. It was Moshe, Aaron, and Miriam. V'gimo matanot tovot nitnu al yadam. And they received 3 special gifts corresponding to these special people. The Eluhin, Habe'er, Anan, V'man. These 3 gifts that Hashem gave us in the schus of these 3 leaders were the Be'er, the well that we had that traveled with us in the desert. The Anan, the clouds of glory that surrounded the Jewish people and protected them from the elements, from other people. The Man, and the godly food that fell down, the Man, that tasted however we wanted it to taste. This completely spiritual food. Be'er b'schut Miriam. The water was in the schus of Miriam. Anan b'schut Aaron. The Ananei HaKavod were in the schus of Aaron. The man bischut Moshe, and the food was in the schus of Moshe. Mita Miriam nistalik habeer shenemar v'tamat sham Miriam v'chtiv lo hayamayim la'ita. And we know, how do we know that the water was in the merit of Miriam? Because it says immediately following her death that the nation no longer had water, and that eventually leads to the story of Mei Meriva, that Moshe hits the rock instead of speaking to the rock, and that eventually leads to Moshe's downfall. Why is it important that Miriam is the one who merits to have the Be'er, the water source, in her merit? Because it goes right along with what Miriam's mission was throughout her life. Then what do we know about water? I remember from a very young age having the vague understanding that whenever we had a water main break, which unfortunately happened very often in the place where I grew up, I'm not sure why, I think we had bad pipes or something. Whenever there was a water main break, we would have a boil water warning for 24 hours after they fixed the pipes. And I would always ask my mother, what does boiling the water have to do with anything? And she said, the water was sitting still for too long, and therefore bacteria can grow. And so we have to boil it so that any water that was sitting still for too long is no longer contaminated by the time we drink it. And this connects to an essential quality of water, and that is that water is always moving. Whether it is because of the specific body of water that it is in, such as fast-moving water is in the ocean, is in rivers, is in streams. These are all examples of very fast-moving water. But even what we consider to be still water, such as lakes, reservoirs, other more still bodies of water, even the water in those bodies of water is always moving. Whether through the water cycle, that it is turning into vapor, and then the clouds are filling up, and it is coming back down as rain, or as just the slight movements from the wind, water is always moving. And an interesting scientific fact is that the faster the water is moving, the more life it can support. Again, I am no scientist, but from my basic understanding, it is because the more the water moves, the more dissolved oxygen is found within the water, and therefore it can support more life forms, which makes sense. If we think about an ocean, which is an example of fast-moving water, there are hundreds of thousands of life forms that can exist within the ocean. But if we think about a small lake or a reservoir, there are a few types of fish that live in there, but not nearly the number of species that can exist in the ocean. And this is the lesson of Miriam, that Miriam is represented by water because Miriam as well was always moving. She was giving over this message of water to the people, that just as water never stops moving, and the more that water moves, the more life it can support. The more you keep on going, the more you can continue to grow. And this was the lesson of Miriam to the Jewish people. And therefore, this stream of water was in her merit. That Hashem was going to represent to the people that just like this water is constantly moving, remember that this message of Miriam, that you as well should constantly be moving. So again, if we just recap these three approaches, Rav Hirsch said that Miriam was the physical leader. She was the one who directed Bnei Israel, much in the way that Aaron did, Miriam did for the women. So it makes sense that she would burst forth in song and that she would lead the people in that way. The second approach was that of the Chasam Sofer, that he says that Miriam was the spiritual leader. She was the one who represented to them what it meant to serve Hashem, and therefore, of course, she should have led them in praising Hashem. In the most pivotal moment, the moment where they have just experienced this tremendous miracle, she should be the one to show them how to thank Hashem in that moment. And then lastly, the third approach, based on the subtleties in the psukim, that Miriam was this motivator of the nation. And this, in this sense, it makes perfect sense as well that Miriam would be the one to lead them in song. That she would say, in this moment, we have to praise Hashem. And she thought ahead with foresight. She said to them, we have to be prepared for this miracle, because I know if we do what Hashem wants and we are able to leave Egypt, Hashem is going to make this miracle for us. So it was this foresight, even from before they left. And she continued it on at the sea, and she said, we have to praise Hashem here. But then she came right back in with her midah that she was known for. She said, yes, let's praise Hashem when we are right here. And then she very strongly gave over to this lesson to the people of, yes, we are praising Hashem right now. And then we are going to move on. We are going to keep going. We are going to get to Har Sinai. We are going to move on from Har Sinai. We are going to get to Eretz Yisrael. Miriam was this motivator, and without her, they could not move. So may we merit to internalize this message of Miriam, this message of the water, to constantly keep moving, to constantly keep growing, to recognize how to serve HaKadosh Baruch Hu, like Miriam taught us, in the best possible way, that it is not about any intermediaries. It is not about the people who are serving Hashem. It is about directly connecting to Hashem. And Miriam's strongest message, which is to always keep growing. Always keep going. Just keep swimming. When the going gets tough, just keep going. Thank you so much, everyone, for joining today. If anyone has a question,